Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. It's been an interesting week for Donald Trump. It has been a, I like to think, I don't think I'm wrong here, that this is the beginning of the end of Donald Trump. Donald has been through controversy after controversy. He has said extreme thing after extreme thing. But this may be the week when it finally ends for him. Now, I know people have written him off before. Obviously, the election isn't this week. This is the middle of August. This is a time a lot of people are focusing on the news. But what we're seeing is this is the point where he's starting to fall apart. And most of it comes out of the confrontation we all know he's had with some Gold Star parents. The parents of a true American hero by the name of Captain Humayun Khan. Captain Khan was born in the United Arab Emirates, came to the United States when he was 2 years old. So he grew up here. His dedication to the people he served really is legendary. There's a wonderful article in the Washington Post about the sacrifice of Captain Khan. He grew up in the United States. He went to school in Virginia. He served his country in Iraq. And in 2004, he was an officer, but he wasn't your ordinary kind of officer. He wasn't someone who, you know, sat there and ordered his troops around. This is a guy who, on his day off, went to check on his troops. Now, again, this was his day off. He'd been told that he needed to relax, to take a day off, but he worked very hard. And most officers didn't go and check on their troops in the field. That was not Captain Khan. Captain Khan decided that as an officer, he needed to check on his people. And he left his fortified compound in Iraq and went to see how his troops were doing, even though, again, the day that he was working, he was in fact told by the author of this article, Crystal Selby, the sergeant who worked with Khan, tried to convince the 27-year-old captain he needed to rest, but he was adamant that he needed to check on his troops first. He went there, and they saw an orange taxi come speeding toward the compound. He told his troops to get back, and he went out alone toward the vehicle, motioning for it to stop. Before he could reach the car exploded, killing the two suicide bombers inside, killing Khan, killing two Iraqi civilians. This was a really great guy. It's not just that he died in honor of his country. Lacey Walker talks about his generosity, how he would lend towels and give food to others and let them know that he was available, that he went to sacrifice because he was inspired by the story of Thomas Jefferson at the University of Virginia. He was Muslim. It was well known, but it wasn't something that he particularly wore on his sleeve. They say he was just your average all-American kid who had an infectious sense of humor and a knack for connecting with others. Captain Khan died serving his country and saved lives in doing so. Many of you know Captain Khan's parents at the Democratic National Convention. talked about, well, his father talked about his son and challenged Donald Trump, who doesn't want Muslims to emigrate to the United States, wants to ban, in fact, all Muslim immigration to the United States. And he challenged Donald Trump to read the Constitution of the United States. Many of you have seen this. In fact, a number of people came up to me because I'm known for carrying a pocket constitution in my pocket, and so is Mr. Khan. He, like I, has used it as a weapon, as a shield, to remind people, like a talisman, a token, to hold it up to say, hey, we must obey this. This is what we have in common. This is what we share as Americans. It was a powerful speech. Captain Khan's mother stood silently by as her husband took on Donald Trump. Donald Trump should have just let this go. He should have taken the lumps and moved on. It was a memorable part of the convention, but like Melania Trump's plagiarism or Ted Cruz's failure to endorse him or Michelle Obama's fantastic speech, it was just one wonderful element of the convention. But Donald Trump is very, very bad at self-control. He decided to attack Captain Khan's mother, who sat by silently as her husband spoke, saying perhaps that because she was Muslim, maybe she wasn't allowed to speak. Well, that betrays an misunderstanding of Islam, but more importantly, it attacks the mother of someone who died serving his country, people we call Gold Star mothers. This is an old term. It's been used for 70 years. Gold Star parents are those who lose their children in war serving their country. She explained that she could not speak because there was a large picture of her son behind them, and she has a hard time speaking while looking at a picture of her son. She wrote a beautiful article in the Washington Post describing how she won't even go into his bedroom. Remember, it's been 12 years to pack up his things because it's too painful. And I understand that. I understand that viscerally. Although my own sister didn't die serving her country, I know the great pain that my parents felt and still feel about losing their daughter in the prime of her life. They say there's no greater anguish than a parent to lose their child. It's out of the order of things. We're supposed to bury our parents. We're not supposed to be as parents burying our children. It is a pain greater than any. So Donald Trump's attack on her was considered pretty vicious, pretty awful. It got worse. I could say almost funny, if it weren't so sad and serious, how stupidly Trump's people started to attack the Khan family, including a spokesperson for Donald Trump, that suggested that Captain Khan was killed due to the policies of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Of course, in 2000...
What?
Yeah, no, that's what she said. The Trump spokesman seemed to not know that Captain Khan was killed in 2004 when Donald Trump was a state senator and Hillary Clinton was a United States senator and the Republicans were very much in control. George W. Bush was president. Republicans controlled Congress. For whatever reason, Captain Khan died. I wouldn't necessarily blame anyone, but certainly wouldn't blame Obama and Hillary Clinton. Now, what's happening in the Republican Party is fascinating. Mr. Khan has such clear moral standing that he's challenging, in a very brave way, going on show after show after show across the nation and challenging Republican leaders to distance themselves from Donald Trump. And they are. Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, John McCain. John McCain, by the way, and I haven't always approved of everything John McCain's done, though I absolutely respect his service and I respect his status as a war hero. But John McCain wrote a beautiful, beautiful letter praising the Khan family and condemning what Donald Trump said about these Gold Stars family. It's a long letter, and it's well worth reading, frankly, the entire thing. I'll just read a little bit of it to you. John McCain said, quote, "In recent days, Donald Trump disparaged a fallen soldier's parents. He has suggested that the likes of their sons should not be allowed in the United States, to say nothing of entering its service. I cannot emphasize enough how deeply I disagree with Mr. Trump's statement. I hope Americans understand the remarks do not reflect the views of our Republican Party, its officers, or candidates." Donald Trump on to say, John McCain went on to say that his sons serve, that he's proud of them, that his youngest served in the war that claimed Captain Khan's life. And he goes on to say, quote, "I am morally bound to speak only to the things that command my allegiance. I will not refrain from doing my utmost," from his work for the United States, "because it may benefit others with whom I disagree." He says it is time for Donald Trump to set the example for our country and the future of the Republican Party. While our party has bestowed upon him the nomination, it is not accompanied by unfettered license to defame those who are the best among us. Pretty powerful stuff. Now again, anyone counseling Donald Trump would surely say to him, take your lumps, the news will move on to other things, change the topic, talk about anything else. But don't hit back. You've already said John McCain isn't a war hero because he was captured. Stop putting your foot in your mouth. I'm quite confident his advisors are telling him that. But Donald Trump, whenever criticized, is going to fight back, whether smart or not. Again, think about having someone thin-skinned as a president doing that. And he has now said that he will not endorse John McCain or Speaker of the House Paul Ryan in their Republican primary campaigns. He specifically told, when speaking of Paul Ryan, that Ryan had asked for his endorsement, but, quote, "I'm not there yet," unquote. Two things. One, Paul Ryan has said he never asked for Donald Trump's endorsement, and I believe Paul Ryan. And number two, you may recall that when Donald Trump first got the nomination, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, said of him, when asked whether he was endorsing Trump, "I'm not there yet," until he later on and went and endorsed Trump. This is clearly payback. Political payback, personal payback, but not very smart. This is a guy who's so thin-skinned that he cannot take an attack without responding. And if it requires getting the help of our enemy, Russia, to commit espionage, he will call on our enemies to commit espionage rather than admit he was wrong. This is an extraordinary time. Now, I have long compared Donald Trump to Senator Joe McCarthy of Wisconsin, the person who created McCarthyism. When we come back from break, I want to describe to you what happened to Joe McCarthy. That dramatic moment when Joe McCarthy, who was maybe the most powerful senator in Washington in the 1950s, when he started to meet his downfall. The beginning of the end of Joe McCarthy, I think you'll find, is very similar to the beginning of the end of Donald Trump. That story when we come back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Thank you.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The entire Republican Party is in disarray. They can't believe what they've done. I have long said that I thought this was an unstable man who would implode, but now the Republican Party is starting to see it. Reince Priebus, the RNC chairman, has publicly said that he's very frustrated and stressed by Trump's behavior. It's a level of panic for the Republican Party. He's not even endorsing the Speaker of the House or John McCain. Even Newt Gingrich, who clearly has been trying his best to defend Donald Trump, is saying that he's about to throw the race away. He needs to discipline himself. But he can't. This is a man who has no power over himself to discipline himself. Lots of people have compared Donald Trump to Mussolini and others. I think the best comparison is to Joe McCarthy. I've given the longer history before where I explain how Joe McCarthy, who attacked communists in the United States government and had everyone afraid of a Red Scare, actually had no particular desire to do that until he got drunk one night and came up with the idea on a dare. But he came to believe his own nonsense, just like Donald Trump has come to believe his own racist, xenophobic nonsense. And it came to a climactic time. The Republicans let McCarthy go for a good while. They knew that he was harming President Harry Truman, Democrat Harry Truman, and they were fine with that. After all, it was helping them win elections. So they let him be for a time. But Joe McCarthy couldn't restrain himself. And so he finally started attacking President Dwight Eisenhower himself, the Republican president. He attacked the United States Army. And at a climactic moment, the Army Council was being questioned by Joe McCarthy, and Joe McCarthy set out to do, as McCarthy was wont to do, attack the reputation of a young man that worked in Joe Welch's office. Joe Welch was the Army's lawyer. Joe Welch then, finally, exploded. He said, quote, "Until this moment, Senator, I think I have never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness. If it were in my power to forgive you for your reckless cruelty, I would do so. I like to think I am a gentleman, but your forgiveness will have to come from someone other than me." McCarthy continued to attack this young lawyer in Welch's office, at which point he said, "Senator, may we drop this? Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?" The proceedings broke into applause. This is largely considered the end of Joe McCarthy. This was the peak. He began to fall from here. His allies started to desert him. The Republican Party started to desert him. They had rode to power on his nonsense, on his false accusations of communists and U.S. government. They rode to power on blacklisting everyone in Hollywood. Thousands, tens of thousands of people lost their jobs. But even the Republicans finally realized that Joe McCarthy had no sense of decency. His fall from power was quick, and that was the end of Joe McCarthy.
Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Donald Trump's campaign is imploding. Republicans are just starting to realize what the rest of us realized a year ago, which is this man, to the extent he is serious, is, well, I don't want to quite say mentally ill. Let's just say he lacks self-control. He may not be all there. He's got a screw loose. He cannot handle himself. Apparently, his inner advisors are planning an intervention where they're going to sit down with him, read him the Riot Act, and try to convince him to act like a normal human being. The thing is, I just don't know that that's possible. Let me just go down a list of things Donald Trump has said just in the last 2 days, just in the last 48 hours. He's I told you he declined to endorse House Speaker Paul Ryan or John McCain against their primary challengers. In fact, he said of John McCain that he has not done a good job for the vets. He attacked Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte, who's in a tough re-election campaign. He suggested that Americans should pull their funds out of the stock market. Remember, this is the same candidate that suggested we would and should, not just would, but should, default on the national debt. When a man, a young man who earned a Purple Heart, gave him his Purple Heart, Donald Trump said, "You know, I've always wanted a Purple Heart. It's a lot easier to get it when someone gives one to you. It's much easier." He said that sexual harassment is the fault of the victim of the harassment. He accused Khan, the father, of being bothered by his plan, Donald Trump's plan, to keep terrorists out of the country. Said he had no regrets about his clash with the family. He even attacked a crying baby. If we have time, I'll play that at the end of this hour. At first, he showed a little bit of humanity, it seemed. The baby was crying, and Donald Trump said, you know, it's okay, he's got good lungs. But within a minute later, he was already attacking the mom for leaving the baby in the crowd and saying he was being sarcastic when he was praising the baby. How many politicians attack babies? He started talking about the election being rigged all within the last 2 days. I guess so that if he loses, people could be angry and maybe violent. President Obama said he was unfit to serve. You should watch that clip. Maybe we have time. We'll play some of that. I told you how they blamed Obama and Clinton for the death of Captain Khan. Paul Manafort, the very well-paid chief of his campaign, the one who used to work for Vladimir Putin's stooge dictator in Ukraine, has told his friends that he's phoning it in. He's just waiting his time, taking his money, cashing his check, and that the rest of the staff is, quote, suicidal, unquote. There's a sitting Republican congressman, Richard Hanna, has said that he's voting for Hillary Clinton. There's the transcript of Trump at Trump University has been released. That's really interesting. That the Washington Post, during its interview with Trump, said that he paused the interview 5 times to watch television coverage right in the middle of his sit-down. I guess he's got ADD. And this is all in the last 2 days. And guess what, my friends? That's not the worst thing he's done in the last 2 days. No, I would say the worst thing, well, let me play a clip for you on MSNBC's Cup of Joe. Joe Scarborough, former Republican congressman of Florida, has been a big supporter of Donald Trump. In fact, during the primaries, he's one of the few people on national TV that would actively defend Donald Trump against Ted Cruz, against Marco Rubio. This is, I cannot think of a more supportive person in the national media towards Trump than Joe Scarborough. I think Joe may have changed his mind. And I want to play for you the moment when I think Joe Scarborough realized what he'd been promoting all along.
What concerns you most about Donald Trump?
1 second. Pause the tape. 1 second. He's interviewing a former General Hayden who worked for George W. Bush. He's asking him what concerned him most about Trump. Michael Hayden was the ex-CIA director. So this is a very powerful person, retired United States Air Force 4-star general, the director of the NSA, former director of the National Security Agency, former director of National Intelligence, former director of the CIA, and again, all under George Bush. Okay, so this is a Republican senior military intelligence guy. And Scarborough is asking Michael Hayden what were his concerns about Donald Trump. Let's listen.
What concerns you most about Donald Trump?
How erratic he is, Joe. I can argue about this position or that position. I do that with the current president. But he's inconsistent. And when you're the head of a global superpower, inconsistency, unpredictability, Those are dangerous things. They frighten your friends and they tempt your enemies. And so I would be very, very concerned.
General Hayden, Harold Ford, very, very quickly. Who amongst your peers that you respect greatly, whether they think like you or not think like you, did you know that's advising Mr. Trump?
No one.
That's a good answer.
I have to follow up with that, and I'll be very careful here. Several months ago, a foreign policy expert on the international level went to advise Donald Trump, and three times he asked about the use of nuclear weapons. Three times he asked, at one point, if we have them, why can't we use them? That's one of the reasons why he just doesn't have foreign policy experts around.
Trump asked three times.
Three times in an hour briefing, why can't we use nuclear weapons? With that.
Be careful, America, and be careful, Republican leaders.
So, General Hayden.
Your party is blowing up.
I want to ask one more time, and it may be classified, but the steps. Donald Trump decides to use a nuclear weapon. What is the time frame between his decision and when the nuclear weapons are launched?
Joe, it's scenario dependent, but the system is designed for speed and decisiveness. It's not designed to debate the decision.
So I let that play out because I wanted you to hear it in real time without my interruption. That large pause you heard in the middle was everyone's jaw dropping. People were speechless. So first, Michael Hayden is asked, who among your colleagues is advising Donald Trump? You know, Michael Hayden knows everybody. He was head of the CIA. He was a four-star general. He was the director of the National Security Agency, the deputy director of National Intelligence. This guy was at the pinnacle of our military and intelligence establishment. So who is advising Donald Trump? Because God knows Hillary Clinton has a slew of advisors from the military and from intelligence. His answer, no one. Pause. At which point Joe Scarborough points out that he knows that when Donald Trump was interviewed in an hour-long interview about national security, he asked three times, if we have nuclear weapons, why can't we use them? And then he asked Michael Hayden, well, you know, how do you use nuclear weapons? And Hayden points out what has to be true. That in the modern age, you don't have time to ask for congressional authorization to use nuclear weapons. If you see those weapons coming from Russia, you might have a minute, 5 minutes, max, to respond. It's designed to be quick. The president says launch, it's launched. No one has time for questions. Maybe they have 30 minutes. I don't even think it's that long. So the guy that could launch nuclear weapons and destroy the world is asking three times, why can't we just use these? This man could theoretically be our next president. All he has to do is get a few more votes than Hillary Clinton. This is not standard Republican-Democratic differences. This is the difference between a strong, intelligent, if imperfect, standard political leader who I've praised and I happen to like. But even if you don't like Hillary Clinton, even if you don't like what she did with the emails, which I think is frankly the only thing anyone can ever find to criticize about her, a typically flawed politician versus someone who is off his rocker, someone who is off who can't wait to be in control of the nuclear weapons and wants to know why we can't use them. Let that sit with you during the commercial break. And when we come back, I want to play for you what President Obama had to say about Donald Trump today.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I think this is the beginning of the end of Donald Trump. Now that his epitaph has been written many times, many thought that he would fall in the polls once he condemned John McCain, said he wasn't a war hero. But, you know, it's one thing to attack a politician, even one who served as honorably as John McCain. It's quite another to attack a Gold Star family that lost their son in a heroic, heroic death, saving others. You know, they criticized him at the Democratic National Convention. I think the criticism was fair. I think Donald Trump's suggestion of a religious test for immigration is unconstitutional, as well as being wrong. But when you're attacked by someone like that, you let it go. You don't keep up the attack. Now the Republican Party is falling apart. It's imploding. It's very much reminiscent of what happened to Joe McCarthy 62 years ago. Joe McCarthy scared the entire nation. It's called the Red Scare for a reason. People were blacklisted. Hundreds of thousands, or at least tens of thousands, lost their jobs, accused of being communists who weren't. But when he started to attack a young man in the law office of the Army General Counsel, he was finally challenged. Joe Welch said, "Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you no sense of decency?" And suddenly even Republicans recognized that Joe McCarthy had no sense of decency. Republicans are starting to realize now that Donald Trump has no sense of decency. I think this is the beginning of the end for him, and I think no one put it better than our president. I'm going to let him go on at length. Yesterday, he gave a press conference. He was asked whether Donald Trump was fit to be president of the United States. Listen closely to the words of President Obama.
Yes, I think the Republican nominee is unfit to serve as president. I said so last week, and he keeps on proving it. The notion that he would attack a Gold Star family that had made such extraordinary sacrifices on behalf of our country. The fact that he doesn't appear to have basic knowledge around critical issues in Europe, in the Middle East, in Asia, means that he's woefully unprepared to do this job. And this is not just my opinion. I think what's been interesting is the repeated denunciations of his statements by leading Republicans, including the Speaker of the House, and the Senate Majority Leader, and prominent Republicans like John McCain. And the question I think that they have to ask themselves is, if you are repeatedly having to say in very strong terms that what he has said is unacceptable, why are you still endorsing him? What does this say about your party that this is your standard bearer? This isn't a situation where you have an episodic gaffe. This is daily and weekly where they are distancing themselves from statements he's making. There has to be a point at which you say, this is not somebody I can support for President of the United States. Even if he purports to be a member of my party. And the fact that that has not yet happened makes some of these denunciations ring hollow. I don't doubt their sincerity. I don't doubt that they were outraged about some of the statements that Mr. Trump and his supporters made about the Kahn family. But there has to come a point at which you say, somebody who makes those kinds of statements doesn't have the judgment, the temperament, the understanding to occupy the most powerful position in the world. Because a lot of people depend on the White House getting stuff right. And this is different than just having policy disagreements. I recognize that they all profoundly disagree with myself or Hillary Clinton on tax policy or on certain elements of foreign policy. But there have been Republican presidents with whom I disagreed with, but I didn't have a doubt that they could function as president. I think I was right and Mitt Romney and John McCain were wrong on certain policy issues, but I never thought that they couldn't do the job. And had they won, I would have been disappointed. But I would have said to all Americans, this is our president, and I know they're going to abide by certain norms and rules and common sense. Will observe basic decency, will have enough knowledge about economic policy and foreign policy and our constitutional traditions and rule of law, that our government will work. And then we'll compete 4 years from now to try to win an election. But that's not the situation here. And that's not just my opinion. That is the opinion of many prominent Republicans. There has to come a point at which you say, enough.
And I think we've reached that point where you say enough. And to end, I want to play a clip from Donald Trump himself. It's not enough that he attacks the family of soldiers that are killed in war. He even attacks a baby.
I have the biggest bank in the world as a tenant of mine in New York. The biggest in the world, a Chinese bank. Don't worry about that baby. I love babies. So I love babies. I hear that baby crying. I like it. What a baby. What a beautiful baby.
See, at first he praises the baby. That's the smart
mom's running around
thing to
like,
do.
Don't worry about it, you know. It's young and beautiful and healthy, and that's what we want. Okay. But look. We have the piggy bank. They have ripped us to shreds. Ripped us absolutely to shreds. Actually, I was only kidding. You can get the baby out of here. That's all right. Don't worry. I think she really believed me that I love having a baby crying while I'm speaking. That's okay. People don't understand. That's okay.
Attacking a baby. Attacking a baby. First he says to the mom, don't worry about it. Leave the baby there. A minute later, he's saying, I was joking. Get that baby out of here. That should be the new campaign slogan of Donald Trump. Get that baby out of here.